Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcasts, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Happy Friday, wherever you may be, or if you're listening on the podcast, thanks for taking us with you, whether you are on a jog, whether you are cooking, driving, wherever you might be. Thanks for listening to Trending with Timory. Today, I'm really excited. We've kind of been through the entire week talking about the topic of everything from in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, the Jonas Brothers, and you name it. We have really taken a deep dive. And today, we're actually joined by medical doctor, Dr. Susan Caldwell. She's a NAPRO practicing doctor. Some people hear about natural family planning and think that's a Catholic version of birth control. And they really miss the mark when they miss the fact that NAPRO technology actually is very well known for helping achieve pregnancy, helping people who are struggling with infertility to discover underlying health causes that's impacting their day-to-day, but also impacting their fertility. So Dr. Susan Caldwell joins me. She practices in New Orleans. She has a blog that you can find at drsusancaldwell.com. We'll include a links in the show notes for her website that you can check out her excellent articles. But today I really wanted to kind of go into a crash course on how NAPRO technology works. A lot of people hear about natural family planning and charting and symptothermal methods and all of that. That's fantastic, and that is a part of the NAPRO world. But what I want to get into is how NAPRO is a solution for so many people, especially women, to address overall women's health. So Dr. Caldwell, welcome to Trending, and thank you for joining us with solutions in an area that so many people have questions.
Thank you, Timory. I love being with you and sharing all this good news with your listeners. So yeah. NAPRO technology is really a great approach to anything that a woman comes to find that is maybe not healthy about her reproductive system. So we're seeking to restore a healthy function to the reproductive system in women who are in their reproductive years, which is really not what I was taught in medical school and what most OBGYNs are taught. I was taught, get rid of the symptom, make the woman happy. You know, get rid of the problem instead of figuring it out. So I like to think of it as, you know, maybe a 4-step process, which is maybe to simplify it. First, we look at the symptoms or signs of a hormonal imbalance that a woman might have, which might be infertility, it might be painful periods, irregular periods, heavy bleeding, what have you. And that's great to even acknowledge the symptoms. But now what do we do about it? Well, the second thing would be to get the data. Like, let's examine what's really happening here. And that would look like charting the cycle, ideally with a Creighton a teacher, practitioner. And that takes about 2 months for a woman to work with a practitioner to see the signs of her biomarkers, what's happening with the bleeding, what's happening with the mucus, all the things that we know are signs of healthy or unhealthy reproductive systems. Then a patient will come back to me and we will do some diagnosis. We will name the problem. We cannot fix a problem we don't know we have. So we do labs, and including hormone testing, and looking at all guided by the chart. And we try to figure out, is she ovulating at all? What do the hormones look like before ovulation, after ovulation in a particular cycle? We might look at her her thyroid hormones. We're going to ask her all kinds of questions about, you know, how's her body and her whole entire person doing, like what's her sleep and her stress and her diet and all that. And then finally, once we have all that information, we can then solve the problem. We can then restore health because we can apply treatment protocols to once. So it's very organized and it makes a lot of sense. It's all logical. And women really feel cared for when they go through this process.
It's a very holistic approach. And I think that that's what so many women are struggling with, whether it be infertility, polycystic ovarian syndrome, all of these women's health issues. It's a band-aid approach and they're not being heard, but Napro technology really looks at the whole person, as you mentioned, stressors, exercise, sleep, food, all of these elements to help figure out what's going on with you individually and how can we work with you. It might be a vitamin D deficiency. It could be a thyroid issue. You know, so many, you know, little pieces have to be fit together. And that's what I love about Napro technology. And I wish more people knew about it. You know, I hear stories of so many people struggling with their fertility today, younger and even a little later in their reproductive years. And if only they had this information. I'll never forget Dr. Caldwell. I was just a little girl, and one of my ice skating coaches when I was ice skating had been struggling for years with infertility. And my mom just happened to pass her a little bit of information about Napro technology. And someone who otherwise never would have been exposed to the information, because it's kind of this Catholic hidden secret, she's able to conceive and has a baby. And, you know, it was a godsend for her. And I've seen, you know, that miracle occur in so many people's lives when the information is there. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe some stories of where people have come to you for various symptoms, whether it be infertility or not, and how you walk through that process you just shared with us?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many patients who just come in and they really don't know anything about their cycle, their body, what's happening. They're so confused. They're, you know, full of all kinds of terrible, you know, just feeling like they're at a kind of a brick wall kind of thing. I will share a story about a patient who I met several years ago, who were kind of got the runaround that many women do. She had a terrible, painful cyst on her ovary, and her mom had cancer, so the doctor was kind of freaking out about it. Went in and removed. It wasn't a Napro surgeon, so that this particular doctor didn't have a lot of skill around the finesse that a Napro surgeon would have. So she ended up taking her whole ovary out instead of the fertility sparing. Yeah, so she lost her ovary, and she had just been through a really bad divorce. She was in an abusive marriage. She was young, in her 20s. And the doctor told her that she either needed to get pregnant right away if she ever wanted to have a baby, or she had to have her eggs frozen.
Oh my goodness.
For later. Right, so you already have this woman in a traumatized state, and she told her to go get pregnant, you know?
Or freeze her eggs.
I mean, here
she
is.
Terrible for a woman's body.
And can you imagine, she's, you know, already, you know, anyway, it was terrible. So, you know, so in her case, we just helped her, which gave her lots of hope, like, oh my goodness. You know, just, we don't, because this is what I find, is that when a woman is facing some sort of a traumatizing diagnosis, like, oh, you may have cancer and you have a cyst, there's a lot of this fear wrapped around it. Like, oh, you know, we've got to get this and take this and shut down your system with birth control. And I mean, it's really fear-based because the tools are not there to restore. So this particular woman, oh my gosh, she started charting her cycles and she had more cysts, but we treated them with Napro technology protocols, with progesterone, and we normalized her hormones. And she ended up getting married again. beautiful, beautiful relationships, so much healing there. And as we continued to work with her cycles, it turned out, you know, if we found a thyroid disorder that needed to be treated. She needed more surgery. So when the doctor, mm-hmm. the NAPRO doctor saw her, they found she was missing a tube. She didn't even know she was missing a tube. So the last surgery just cut all of, anyway. And she had extensive endometriosis with bladder involvement, bowel involvement. Mm. She had to have her colon repaired because this was so many years later after this, the first surgeon really didn't know what they were doing. And so the good news is the NAPRO surgeon was able to treat and kind of restore the function as much as they could with, in other words, the remaining tube was open. The remaining ovary was healthy. We her hormones are perfect. Her chart looks perfect. And so we are very hopeful that she will be able to conceive soon. And she's very healthy otherwise. And so we see this all the time, though, with individualized care that isn't rushed and isn't shutting down the function of her, you know, reproductive system. We can really restore, you know, now look, she may or may not conceive, but she's healthy.
Whereas when we
bypass, yes, there's, and when we bypass and we start going down the route of IVF and insemination and surrogacy and all these things, we really are, the woman is getting dismissed. Mm-hmm. What is really happening in her body is not being treated. Mm-hmm. And it's just heartbreaking. Yeah,
and I mean, looking at this case, if you're just joining us, that's Dr. Susan Caldwell. She's a medical doctor practicing NAPRO technology, a true solution for women's health and women's fertility and infertility as well. You need to have this information and be prepared to share it with someone you know and love. We'll include all sorts of links for resources in the podcast notes at relevantradio.com/trending when the podcast goes up today. And as I hear the story you just gave us, Dr. Caldwell, you know, she has so many of those things that today people are told they won't have children. She had one ovary removed. She had, you know, she ends up having children later. I'm guessing probably later into her 30s. She has endometriosis. You know, she has a thyroid issue. These all together, if you just take one of them, many women are being told they won't have children and they should freeze eggs. But all of these together, you're saying there's hope, there's potential. You've seen good and positive outcomes. And yeah, I hear so much in the celebrity world where people are raising their hand saying, I have endometriosis, or people raising their hand saying, you know, I'm struggling with infertility and I've chosen this path. And we as a culture, Dr. Caldwell, want to hear a success story. We want to hear the good news of people's lives coming together, them being able to have children by some means, you know, finding out the information about, you know, the announcement of whether they're having a boy or a girl, seeing these people become parents. And so what I want to talk about in just a minute here is the challenge that we've been discussing all week here on Trending, this challenge for us as a culture to think that we have to go along and celebrate any means of conceiving a child. Although, yes, we should always respect and honor any child that's given, we do have a problem sometimes with the ways of getting there. So we're going to get there in just a moment. If you have a question for Dr. Caldwell surrounding fertility and infertility, we'd love to take it. The number's 1-888-914-9149. And we're also taking questions on Instagram. You can ask a question live now on my Instagram story at Timmery. There's a question box up there. Just follow me at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. We'll be right back with Dr. Susan Caldwell taking your questions, diving a little bit into her story and why she wouldn't recommend IVF or surrogacy, both as a professional as well as from her own experience. So don't go away. We'll be right back discussing this and also discussing the tie-in of one of the most streamed shows on Netflix, Selling Sunset, as well as taking a question about what do you do when your teenager has determined that they are no longer going to go to church. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
So many questions coming in about women's health, fertility, and infertility. And gentlemen, you don't have to go anywhere because this is an important topic. Infertility is on the rise. I've been discussing it all week, especially with stories such as surrogacy and IVF being used so regularly in our society, whether via a loved one who's going into debt to do so, or people such as the Jonas Brothers, you name it. It's important that we're prepared to talk about it. And so we're talking about medical solutions to fertility and women's health. If you have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can ask your question live now on Instagram. I've put a question box up on my Instagram story. Ask me there at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Wow, so many questions for you, Dr. Caldwell. Dr. Susan Caldwell is a medical doctor, NAPRO physician, and she's taking your questions. We'll start with Guadalupe from San Francisco calling. She's 32 years old and has a question about conceiving. Guadalupe, what's your question for Dr. Caldwell?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm 32 years old, and I've been trying to conceive for about 5 years, and it hasn't happened. Where do I start? I mean, the topic is so broad. I'm very new to this. I went to my doctor, and they just told me I'm fine. There's nothing wrong. So where do I begin to do my research?
Yeah, good. Thank you for calling, Guadalupe. So there is something wrong, right? Because there's infertility. There's a difficulty getting pregnant for more than a year. So there, you deserve a more thorough evaluation at this point. It would be great if you could find a Creighton charting teacher in your vicinity. If not, you could find one who works remotely. And fertilitycare.org is the where you can go for that right away. And they can start working with you and helping you to see what your body's telling you about your fertility. And they can help you find the very subtle signs, markers that something might be wrong, so that more can be looked at. So for example, if you came to me with your chart, and your chart looked perfect, and we examined your hormones and measured your hormones, you would go to the lab maybe 7 or 8 times within 1 month so we could measure hormones. And if all that was perfect, your thyroid was perfect, and all of our checklists that we do as a medical doctor is perfect, then you would go to the NAPRO surgeon who would do another evaluation, looking at your tubes, looking for infections, looking at the ovaries. So there's multiple layers that we can go deeper and deeper and deeper until we find the cause. Because until you've had a thorough evaluation like that, we don't know. It's called unexplained infertility. And so NAPRO provides a good, deeper look into that. So that's where I would send you.
And we're going to post a link now on social media. If you keep an eye out on my Twitter, and it'll be in the show notes for today's podcast, we'll include a link to a list of telehealth practitioners for NAPRO technology in case you don't have one in your area, as well as a full list of medical consultants and NAPRO technicians who can be found in your area. And sometimes I've known people who have traveled, a few hours away in order to see a NAPRO doctor. People who went to my NAPRO doctor in Southern California would travel a couple hours to come and see her. They're all over. I know someone was just asking the question if there's a NAPRO doctor in Los Angeles. I know of I think 2 or 3 mm-hmm. NAPRO doctors in mm-hmm. the Los Angeles area. Do you know a name off the top of your head, Dr. Caldwell?
Dr. Mary Kitab,
yes, is in Orange County, so that's not too far of a drive. But I know of a really good one in LA, and I can't remember their name right now. But look at that list. It's a very comprehensive list. So that was Jasmine's question. Do you know NAFR doctors in Los Angeles? Dr. Mary Katab is in Los Angeles, Dr. Teresa Stegan in San Diego, but I know of a couple really good ones in LA. If you just look up NAPRO technology, that's NAPRO, Google search will pull it up, or again, we're posting that on social media. And for anyone who's struggling with fertility, please know we are praying for you, Guadalupe. We are praying for you. There is so much hope. And I always remember, especially when I was struggling with my fertility as well, I had a lot of peace. I knew it was going to be a problem before getting married, and I didn't know how big of a problem it would be until after we were married. And I just kept thinking, Lord, all of salvation history centers around the topic of fertility. You know, people who were told they would be barren and never have children, people who were too old. You bring about miracles because human life is an absolute gift and miracle. And so have hope. Allow our Lord to work salvation history in you and in your story as well. Dr. Caldwell, we have a question coming in on Instagram from Sylvdilv. She says, my doctor said fibroids in my age, being 45, would make it hard to get pregnant. Is that true?
Maybe and maybe not. So because you know you really need an expert surgeon who is an expert in fertility surgery, not just your average GYN surgery. And being 45 may not be a barrier. If you're ovulating, you know, that's why charting is so important, because you could really tell by charting how well you're ovulating. So that's super important. The anatomy is super important. Making sure to consult with a doctor who specializes in restorative reproductive surgery, like a NAPRO surgeon. I am not a NAPRO surgeon, but there are NAPRO surgeons on that list from fertilitycare.org. You'll see a little star by some of their names, and AFC, there's a designation that tells you they're a surgeon. But or call the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha. They will direct you to somebody, the closest surgeon near you. But yes, you really should, consult, because the answer might be, you might have a fibroid that in no way impacts your fertility. So it really depends on getting a good evaluation from a skilled surgeon.
Another question coming in on Instagram about fibroids. And if you have a question, please, you can give us a call, 1-888-914-9149. Dr. Caldwell will be happy to take it. We'll also take questions on Instagram now. If you have a question, follow me at Timmerie to ask that. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Rosebuddy on Instagram is asking about fibroids' impact on fertility, and why do we get fibroids, and should they be removed?
So it depends. If you can kind of Google an image of fibroids and how they attach to the uterus. Some of them attached on the outside of the uterus, and those fibroids don't impact fertility very much. But the fibroids that are within the uterine cavity can indeed impact fertility negatively. So why do we get them? We think there's a genetic component for sure, and generally our chances of fibroids increase with age, and we do think that there is a link to estrogen dominance that increases the risk of fibroids. So you definitely want to have, anyone with fibroids, it would be great to find out what your progesterone levels are, because in many of those women, progesterone is low and estrogen is allowed to really control the what's happening at the level of the uterus. And if there's a lot of estrogen, there can be fibroid growth. So it would be important to get those progesterone levels checked in anybody with fibroids.
Excellent. Okay. Continuing on with our questions, Michelle on Facebook has a question, kind of a little bit of a long story. She essentially has a history of PCOS and hypothyroidism. By the way, me too. And she said both conditions have been under control with medication for over a year, but she still lost a baby to miscarriage last year and another within a couple of years. So two miscarriages over the last 3 years. She said she's been trying to conceive again, but is also worried about her age. She says, is there any advice that could be offered? And she also adds that she was asked to visit a fertility clinic by the OBGYN, but since they're looking to get pregnant naturally, she's wondering if there are any Catholic resources. So Dr. Caldwell is that resource. Shoot Dr. Caldwell.
Yes. So again, you know, we're back to, you know, this is a case of infertility, a case that where a pregnancy has happened, but it has not been sustained. There are so many easily treatable reasons. And unfortunately, most OBGYNs do not have the tools to look for that. So, you know, in the short term, make sure you're on a very healthy diet, maybe get rid of gluten, really make sure you're sleeping well, a good prenatal vitamin that is methylated, has that methylfolate, the methocobalamin, which is the B12. Those are very good, just excellent prenatal vitamins. And get yourself charting. You might have, there's so many cases I can tell you where when a woman started charting, we were able to measure those progesterone levels. They were not healthy. We got them treated. We optimized the thyroid function, and you know, fertility was completely restored. So, you know, I just get excited hearing this story because I just hear, oh man, this is so good and so treatable. Yeah. In the right hands.
And I'm so sorry, Michelle, for your loss of those two babies. I can't even imagine. It's so difficult. But I think sometimes the good news is to know that you can get pregnant, and especially recently, that's a really good sign. And just speaking personally, I have PCOS, I have hypothyroidism with Hashimoto's and a few other things going on, and we did conceive our baby. Yes, some challenges, some time, absolutely. But you know, I've seen a lot of people with your exact same condition who have been able to. And so, you know, there's hope. My story is one of hope in those same instances. So fantastic questions. And again, just a reminder, we're posting links on my Twitter as well as in the podcast notes for today's show. These are resources you must have. They should be, you know, we used to talk about keeping, you know, certain phone numbers on speed dial. These should be in your notes and your phone, always ready to go. Okay, more questions. Megan's asking on Instagram, is progesterone supplementation forever? And if you could just briefly mention why someone might use progesterone supplementation long term as part of that question.
Yeah, so we use progesterone for many, many treatments. So for example, we do a lot of progesterone in people who are having irregular periods, who aren't having a period every month, because in, like, for example, in the adolescent girl before she has her first baby, you know, in the late teens, early 20s, sometimes there can be just an immaturity of that whole reproductive system. So progesterone can temporarily, when given every month, help restore the regularity of the cycle. So in the case like that, it would be temporary. I have some patients who have trouble staying pregnant or getting pregnant without progesterone, but once they're pregnant, they don't need progesterone anymore. I have people who just need progesterone in pregnancy, but otherwise don't need progesterone. So no, it's not forever, but it depends. So we have a lot of patients with polycystic ovarian syndrome who have chronically low progesterone. And I'm thinking of a few patients like that in my practice where, you know, in between each baby and sometimes during their pregnancies, they will need some progesterone support. And, you know, we have found that women who have low progesterone are at higher risk for breast cancers and then overall cancers in general. So for those women who do find themselves low in progesterone, it does behoove them to stay on progesterone as long as they need to while they're in regular cycles. And then again, many women, even, gosh, it just seems like progesterone should be in the water, but not really, because it does need to be timed. No. But I'm just, as I'm talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, you'd think I have stock in progesterone, and I don't. But no, in menopause or in the perimenopausal time frame, a lot of women benefit from progesterone because it helps them sleep and it helps lighten those heavy periods they can get. So you know, no, we don't think of progesterone as something like, you know, you would start and forever you would need it. But like all, you know, good women's health, it's personalized for the woman, and not just for her in general, but for her season of her reproductive life. So we really try to give women only what they need, only for as long as they need it.
Excellent. And a follow-up on that, another question came in about polycystic ovarian syndrome. If someone is taking progesterone, they get pregnant, let's say first pregnancy, and then they end up going through that, you know, after pregnancy, how should they follow back up? You know, if they had been on kind of that NAPRO track and then they've fallen off the bandwagon, they say, hey, I had a kid, you know, what next? Do I need to keep going? What should someone do and what should that time frame look like? Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully that particular woman would have really gotten an idea of what her cycles were like before pregnancy. So once she gets back into cycles, she can kind of pay attention. And if her cycle pattern looks like it did before, so that might be, you know, what we call continuous mucus cycles, or difficulty identifying ovulation, or a very late ovulation. There's lots of different patterns that PCOS can show. If she's seeing that pattern again, then she needs to get back in touch with her doctor, and she might and be tested and have someone look at her cycles. But, you know, it could be that she would need to be back on progesterone or be treated again. Yeah.
Great. We have, okay, yay for the gentlemen who are sticking with us. This is how important this topic is. We have Mario from Los Angeles calling with a comment that I think will be really helpful for a question to throw your way as well, Dr. Caldwell. Mario, what would you like to share with us about fertility today?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, it breaks my heart to hear so many women that cannot conceive. And this is so unknown that you'll be surprised. My wife and I, we tried to get pregnant for, I don't know, something like 3 years. And my sister-in-law, my wife's sister, tried for about the same time, and they couldn't. Okay? There is something called, it's a Spanish word, it's called sobadora, which, just like you say, chiropractor or, a cardiologist, okay. That's the title of these people, and they're very, it's very traditional in like third world countries like Mexico, China. I'm from Mexico. So when my sister-in-law could not conceive, she went to a sobadora, and what they do many things. For example, if you dislocate your wrist, which my son did, and I took him there, they have like a gift. They can massage it, and they know the anatomy, and then they pop it back in.
Interesting. So you're talking about putting things back in place. So
yes,
what was that, a place for your sister?
Yes, a brother-in-law lifted a refrigerator, which was not a good thing to do. By himself, his disc just popped out. He didn't go to a doctor. He went to one of these sobadoras, and they popped it back in. And he would have had surgery. Now, yes. Going back to the point about pregnancy.
Yes, please,
I
share with us what was out of
limited.
Place here. Yes.
Well, I just wanted to give you these two examples, but here's the main thing. What a lot of people don't know is the body created by God is so intelligent, so perfect. Mm. And the fallopian tubes, a lot of times they're just not in the right place. They might be a little too high or a little too low, or the uterus might be a little too high or a little too low for whatever reason. Well, my sister-in-law went to this person, and she told her, oh, your fallopian tubes are too high. So she put them back in place. It's painful. She put them back in place just by massaging it in place. And then she told her, just come back in a month. This is after 3 years of trying. And she was really young. She was about 24 years old. She told her, come back in a month just to make sure that they're in place. And when she came back a month later, she barely touched her, started to touch her in her, you know, abdomen. And she said, oh, sweetie, I can't do anything anymore. You're pregnant. I cannot do anything.
Praise God. So let's go ahead and talk about that, Dr. Caldwell. Is that a normal thing where perhaps the uterus or the fallopian tubes can be out of place, and that's a part of what needs to happen in this journey towards pregnancy?
Right. Well, to be honest, that is not my you know, my specialty, the anatomical evaluation and treatment. I'm more from the medical, the hormonal. But yes, alternative therapies can really help. Chiropractors, acupuncture, so many alternative therapies. Definitely, I would never want to say that, you know, Napper technology is the only thing out there. There are Chinese medicine doctors that have, you know, I think everybody has, there's many different approaches to women's health. So I think there's room for everybody who is of goodwill and has an approach that seeks to restore what is not functioning. So I love that. Yeah.
Very cool story. Thank you for sharing. Let's go ahead and take another question. We have more coming in. Is the only way to know if you are fertile or infertile to see a doctor, or is there a home test?
So I think there are some things you can do at home that would start to answer that question, because if you're talking about a woman, there are so many different things at play that there's no one way to know for sure. The only way to know if you're really fertile is to, you know, have sex and try to get pregnant. I mean, that's really the only way to know for sure. But at home, you know, you can track your cycles. You can look for signs of ovulation. Look for, you know, the fertile mucus. That's one way. You could do a Prove test, which is a urine hormone test for progesterone. If it does show that you've ovulated, it's one sign to say that you've ovulated. But there is no really home quick test, to be honest. You really do need fertility is so complicated. It just helps to have someone who has some expertise to help you, because I think otherwise you can kind of start to feel very isolated and lonely when you come up against questions that you can't answer yourself, and you get frustrated. So it would be nice to have a charting teacher at least to reach out to help you to know whether you have signs that you're fertile or infertile.
I'll even say I wish that I had been known about Napro doctors for years, been surrounded by them, never thought I would need to work with a Napro doctor. And I wish that before I got married, I had started that process to just do a checkup, see how everything was going with my fertility. And with the rise in infertility today, I think it's a really good thing to do, especially because so many women, when they first get married, they have this panic moment. Well, I'm not pregnant in month two or month three. It was something wrong with me. And so I think that might be helpful in an age of infertility, perhaps to go for that checkup with a Napro physician specifically. Another question coming in. We have time for just a couple more. So many questions here. Again, you can ask your question 1-888-914-9149 or on Instagram at Timmerie, TIMMERIE. We have a question from Brittany on Instagram. Have you ever seen, Dr. Caldwell, couples who are able to get pregnant naturally if the male has problems with motility and morphology? And if you could explain what those are for those who don't know.
Yes. So when a man does a seminal fluid analysis, when he provides a sample of his semen for analysis, there are different parameters that are studied to make sure that the sperm look healthy. So morphology would mean the shape of the sperm. So in order, you know, just you can imagine, it just makes sense. If the sperm is going to swim well, it needs to have, it can't have a crooked tail or a double head. You know, it has to be very streamlined and built for swimming, if you will. So if it doesn't have the right morphology, that can be a little problematic. But remember, we're talking about tens of millions of sperm in one ejaculate. So they're looking for a percentage that have normal parameters in terms of the shape. And then the motility would be just how well those sperm navigate the fluid that they're in. Those are two things that are looked at. But yes, I mean, a man can have poor morphology and motility and even low sperm count and still get pregnant. But if that were the case, I would recommend that the man get, you know, seen by a primary care doctor and or urologist, or even, you know, the OBGYN sometimes can recommend certain vitamins and supplements that would maximize that or help that or those two parameters, or he might, you know, not be well in general. You know, he might have diabetes, or he might have high blood pressure or some other things. And men, just like women, in order to be fertile optimally, they need to be healthy. So that man should have an evaluation. But absolutely, there's hope. There's much, much hope. It's much easier for men to be fertile than it is for women. So yes. But I still would seek a little bit of a treatment for that. Or
infertility
evaluation.
Infertility can be a thing that must be done together as a couple. I remember when we found out that I was going to have a difficult time, a handout was given to me to help, you know, improve egg quality and improve overall fertility. And that same handout had things listed for men as well. And a lot of them are things that you can do together as a couple in terms of cleaning up your diet, among other things that were really important. There's a follow-up comment on the same question about motility morphology for men. Brittany just said, we just got back a very poor test after 6 months of HCG injections for my husband. Any comment here?
So he was getting HCG injections, right? Is that what it said? I'm not familiar with that treatment.
Okay. Yeah. So no feedback on that. But yeah, I, again, encourage to work with Napro Technology. And that's what's so great is there are specialists even within Napro Technology who work with male fertility as well. It's a growing area that's being impacted. We've seen, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, that over the last 40 to 50 years, studies have shown that the quantity of sperm for men has more than halved. And so there is a tremendous amount of concern surrounding fertility for men as well as women, yet we tend to only speak of it from a female perspective. Okay, only a couple more questions here. We're coming up against the end of our time. One comment from Happy Heart on Instagram. We are open to life. We have not been able to conceive. Where do we start to get help?
So I think that would be the same answer as before. So you need to start charting, because we need to find the symptoms. There's going to anybody who has trouble is having trouble getting pregnant. They're going to have other clues that their body is giving them that something's amiss. So it's a matter of getting some help to be able to tune into the body and find out what is going on that might be preventing fertility. So reaching out to a charting instructor, a Creighton instructor would be great, because that kind of leads right into the path of medical diagnosis and treatment if that should be needed.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, so many questions. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Caldwell. I know that for many people, fertility is truly weighing on their hearts. And so we pray for you if you are struggling to conceive, if you desire to conceive. Please know you are in my prayers daily. I have a prayer list of so many of you who have shared your names and your stories. And if you'd like to share your name, I'd love to pray for you by name. Dr. Caldwell has devoted her life to this. She has a blog that you can check out. That's drsusancaldwell.com. That's Dr. Susan Caldwell, spelled CALDWELL.com, with everything from addressing infertility to the aftermath of contraception and birth control use, you name it. This is why our Napro doctors are amazing, and I hope you'll keep their resource saved in your phone to give to someone who will need this. You will come across this as fertility issues are on the rise. Dr. Caldwell, thank you for taking the time to be with us. Any links that we've mentioned will be in the podcast notes for today's show, relevantradio.com/trending, available later tonight or wherever you catch your podcasts. I'll be right back to discuss the question, what do you do when your teenager says they no longer want to go to church? And we'll also discuss some of the stars from the show Selling Sunset, one of the top streamed shows on Netflix today, having to do with realtors and selling real estate in Southern California. I'll be right back. Solidarity HealthShare now offers a new program called Solidarity One. With Solidarity One, members decide what healthcare options best fit their needs and with the flexibility to meet any budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I want to talk in just a moment about one of the top streamed shows on Netflix, fascinating reality TV show. I'm not recommending it, but it is interesting to see some of the trends going on behind it. But before we go there, a question that is really important came through on Instagram from Nabida. And the question is, what do you do when your teenagers tell you they don't want to go to church anymore? This is a rough question. Because here you are, you have your teenager, you know, you have them raised in your home, you're passing on this faith, and they're saying they don't want to do something that, one, you do as a family, two, is important for passing on the faith, and three, it's a crisis for you as a parent to hear that your child very well may not believe in God. And that's what's so scary about this trend of not wanting to go to church is, for many, especially during COVID, we've seen this trend of many young people losing faith in God. And, you know, we've seen a lot of this surrounding social media use and conversation and the culture of skepticism we live in. But as a parent, what do you do when your teenager says they no longer want to go to church? Number one, and I know you've heard it a million times, I'm going to say it again, you must pray for your children. Whether your children go to church now, are struggling or not, pray for your children. Pray for the gift of faith for them. Number two, fast for them. When Jesus Christ comes down from Mount Tabor, where we see the transfiguration occurs, when he is raised up into heaven before Peter, James, and John, and Moses and Elijah are there, and we hear God's voice speaking from heaven saying, "This is my beloved son." In that moment, after he comes down from the mountain, there's a demoniac and there's this work that the apostles are trying to do in casting out this demon. And they're not able to do it. And Jesus says some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. Now, I'm not saying your child has a demon, but what I am saying is many circumstances in society today, we must fast. If we want to see the power of evil that is coming in and stealing the faith of so many people today obliterated, we need to participate in fasting for those whom we love. And so prayer and fasting together are so important. Third, I really want to encourage you, this is where the conversation starts to happen. Instead of giving your argument right away as to why your kid has to go to church, start by asking why. Why don't they want to go to church? Ask them, do you believe in God? Why don't you believe in God? What's your argument for not believing in God? Make sure you do so in a non-hostile way, making sure even things such as body language, tone, attitude are very relaxed so that you're not making this a bigger issue. It is a very big issue, but it is one where they need to feel comfortable, one, to have the conversation, but B, to probably think through questions they might not have actually thought through. And maybe when your child first tells you or is first starting to approach claiming they don't want to go to church, maybe you're not in a good place to have that conversation. You need to give it, you know, in half an hour, a couple hours, a couple of days. Maybe even prepare them, say, hey, I have some questions I'd like to talk to you about, so that they have time to not feel confronted, but they can actually start to think through it as well. Now, I think that, so far, four things: pray for your child, fast for them, ask them questions, and then fourth, make strategic moves. And I think this is really important. Make strategic moves. So as you start to gather information from your child about why he or her does not want to go to church or why they do not believe in God, often a lot of what's happening is your kid needs to be inspired in their faith. And so they need to be around people who are going to help inspire them. That includes mentors. That also includes peers. And I think that that's really important. So I'm not saying throw your kid right into a youth group program. That might be really bad for them, depending on what their attitude and their demeanor is about faith. But what I am saying is maybe you need to be in an environment around people who are more so on fire for their faith in a way that would be conducive for your child. I've known people who they've had to change parishes they go to because perhaps the preaching was more robust and the kid was having a really hard time with lousy preaching at church. I know some people who have changed parishes and traveled quite a ways to go to a parish where there's more reverence surrounding our Lord and receiving Him in Holy Communion. There are reasons why a lot of people are making choices to go to parishes that show more reverence, that have people who, I'm not trying to make, you know, people sound better than some areas or not, but where their kids can see an example of a devotion and a practice of prayer that is more visibly respectful than some circumstances, to be honest, we sometimes see. I can tell you firsthand, growing up in Southern California, it was really hard at times to see their irreverence in receiving Holy Communion, to see the irreverence that would occur during the, you know, consecration, during parts of the Mass, before and after. I have a really close friend who struggled for years with believing in the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And once he started attending a Mass that was more respectful, once he started to see people who took their faith more seriously and weren't just showing up to church to check off a checkbox, it was a game changer for him. But there were also a lot of people praying and fasting for him at the same time for his faith, helping him to overcome his skepticism, helping him to overcome his lack of belief in the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And so these are very important. I think that, again, prayer, fasting, ask questions, and remember, listen. And four, make strategic moves. If you need to change parishes, change people you and your kids are spending time around. I think if your kid's saying that he or her does not want to go to church anymore, that's a big sign that things need to change. And your teen might not like it at first, but it's worth helping to save their soul. It's worth their faith in God. And finally, should you or should you not make them go to church? I think that the better question in the conversation to have with your teen isn't that you're making them to go to church. It's that in our home, as a family, we go to church. I can't, and you can even say this, I can't force you to believe in God. I can't force you to participate in Mass. But what I do ask is that you go with us as a family and that you act respectful. And I think that in having that expectation without sounding so forceful, one, you're still exposing your child to God, even if they're mad for going. But two, it's your house, they're under your care, and you have every right to require that they go to church. But we can handle better perhaps how we enforce that without aggravating too far in the midst of what's already an existential crisis for many teenagers. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. The topic of young people choosing not to go to church is a trend occurring, especially over the last couple of years. We have to remember, as people of faith, to set an example of hope, to set an example of joy, to set an example of conversation and learning, of listening to other people's opinions and thoughts and even struggles with their belief in the Eucharist. We should know if our loved ones are struggling with a belief in the true presence. We should know if they're struggling with skepticism. So engage in those conversations in the home and make sure others feel welcome to have their opinion shared to you as well. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. We'll be back on Monday for our next happy hour. Don't miss it.